and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Happy Wednesday, and welcome to Intravenous here on Campus and Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Robin, and just here really to introduce the show for today. We've had the privilege of broadcasting some of the panel discussion that was put together by SFU Public Square. The panel happened last week and was called Mobilizing Fear and Information, Anti-SOGI and Parents' Rights Movements. And for anyone who doesn't know what SOGI is, it refers to sexual orientation and gender identity, and the panel discussion that we'll hear is in response to some of the backlash that's happening out there in the community in terms of how sexual orientation and gender identity is being affecting kids in our community. And so we're going to hear that that panel outside of a few question and answers at the very end, but in its entirety today.
Welcome to Mobilizing Fear and Misinformation, Anti-SOGI and Parents' Rights Movements. I'd like to begin with recognizing the unceded territories, including the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam, and Musqueam nations on which the city of Vancouver is located. Rather than having an Indigenous elder come and open the ceremony, we have chosen to make a donation to Niskana Foundation. And in the chat, you'll find pay your rent as an option to acknowledge that we are uninvited guests on these territories. My name is Travers. I'm a sociology professor at Simon Fraser University. I am responsible for organizing this event. There's no way that you cannot have been aware of all the anti-trans campaigns that are happening, and there was the 1 million voices for children. One of the things that is so alarming is that ordinary people are being exposed to lies and misinformation, the purpose of which is to generate fear and push trans and queer people back out of public life. I'm in the process of interviewing trans youth, and one of the things that I find myself saying to them when they talk about how difficult the current political climate is for them personally, I take a little moment to be a trans elder and say, well, just so you know, I was born in 1962. I never in my wildest dreams ever expected to have the quality of life and inclusion that I experience. I never believed it would happen. We have done incredible things. The queer and trans people before me and those who have continued to organize, in a 50-year period, we have radically changed the way in which queer and trans people are viewed and treated in society. And we need to understand what's happening, this current backlash, as a response to our success. And that is really important, to understand that what is happening, anti-trans campaigns, anti-SOGI campaigns, conservative politicians, they are trying to push us back out of public life. And that is where we will not go. We are going to have some setbacks. We're not going to win things. Sometimes these measures are going to be passed, but we have to have the faith that we've accomplished so much already under way worse circumstances, so we're going to do it again. And the purpose of this panel is literally to give people an opportunity to find out what the lies that they're being told, where misinformation is, and be in a room, either online or in person, where you can ask questions and we can have a discussion. That is our purpose. We're going to hear some remarks from our openers, the moderator, and then panelists, and there will be a Q&A session after the panelist discussion. There are a few community guidelines that I will ask all of us to respect so that we can have a safe, honest, socially accountable dialogue together. Above all, there will be zero tolerance for those who promote violence or discrimination against others. Anyone who incites harm towards other participants will be removed at the discretion of our technical team and moderator. We also ask that you don't assume pronouns, gender, or knowledge based on someone's name or appearance. Please refer to people using the pronouns they provide, and don't be afraid of making a mistake. Either you'll be corrected or you'll correct yourself and we keep going. And we ask you finally to approach this event with an open mind and an open heart. Be curious. And now I'd like to introduce Scout, the Director of National Programs at the ARC Foundation, who will be sharing a few words. Scout is an education and youth engagement specialist with over a decade of progressive leadership experience in the nonprofit sector. They support SOGI inclusive education through collaboration and empathy and have a deep commitment to creating inclusive spaces for all. They have worked with education leaders across Canada to share, workshop, and refine best practices in supporting 2S LGBTQ plus students, staff, and families. Scout is responsible for leading SOGI 123 programs nationally for the ARC Foundation.
Thank you, Travis, and thank you for having me at this event and for giving the opportunity for us to speak a little bit. As you heard, I work with SOGI 123, and we know that SOGI Inclusive Education and SOGI 123, the program that we run and the ways we support educators are different, but they often get really collapsed into the same thing. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what we do as an organization. SOGI 123 supports educators. Right now we're working in BC, the Yukon, the Prairies, and Atlantic Canada. And we work directly with school staff, with directors, superintendents, EAs, anyone within the schools that are trying to create those safe and inclusive environments for their students. So we try to provide that direct support to staff so that they can better support their kids. We know that so many educators are really dedicated to doing this work. I know there's so many people who have joined today to figure out how to do this well, especially in this time of increased hate and increased misinformation and a lot of lies about what is actually happening in schools. We know that students thrive when parents and school staff, teachers work together, and that the best opportunities and the best outcomes for youth are when the parents are engaged. And we really want to welcome parents in, and so really appreciate this event focusing on that and really making sure that students are supported by staff and families alike. We are so grateful to have been asked to join and to speak a little bit about SOGI 123, where we know that this rise in hate is making it more difficult. Again, we've made a lot of progress, but there's a real increase in fear amongst educators. So for the educators, know that you can access us, our resources, everything we have online is free and available, and you can reach out and we can support you in navigating this as well. Thank you so much.
Scout, thank you so much. We have some brilliant panelists that I will be sitting in conversation with today. I'm going to briefly introduce them here and give them the chance to speak more about their research in a few minutes. We have Dr. J. Wallace Skelton, who is an assistant professor of queer studies and education at the University of Regina. Jay is interested in research with children as co-researchers and in using comics to make academia more accessible. Dr. Victoria Thomas is an assistant professor of media and public engagement in the School of Communication at SFU. As an interdisciplinary scholar of Black popular cultural studies, she primarily analyzes popular media to articulate how visual culture represents Blackness and Black identities. Her research is committed to political and civic engagement, diversity, and inclusion in public institutions to transform societal conditions. And now I'd like to introduce the moderator for today's discussion. We're so lucky to have Michelle Elliott with us here today. Michelle is an award-winning journalist and the host of CBC, British Columbia's weekday call-in show, BC Today, where she engages in conversation with listeners on the day's top stories and on issues important to British Columbians. Michelle has hosted numerous CBC News specials, including election and provincial budget coverage on both local and network programs. She has also tapped into her Filipina heritage as part of CBC's Mabuhay BC, an ongoing initiative to share stories from the province's Filipino community. Born in the Philippines, Michelle moved to Canada at 12 years old, settling in North Vancouver. Her experience as a young immigrant inspired a yearning to tell the stories of people whose lives are changed by new circumstances. Thank you again, Michelle, and over to you.
Thank you very much, Travers. It's my pleasure to be here with you. And we're going to get into a discussion a little bit later on. We'll have a Q&A just amongst ourselves here with our panelists. And as well, we'll take some questions from our audience both here and online. Right now, let's hear a little bit more from our panel members and find out more about their perspectives and their research and how that informs what they bring to our discussion here today. And let's start with Dr. Victoria Thomas.
Hi, everyone. My pronouns are she and her. As mentioned before by Travis, I am an assistant professor in the School of Communication. A lot of my research looks at media representations of Black trans identities and non-binary identities. I also do some research and lots of interviews and focus groups with Black trans women in Surrey. So a lot of my research focuses on thinking about the intersections of Blackness and transness and ways in which we can be better community members, in particular Black community members, to our queer and trans sisters and brothers. So currently working on a project looking at hate speech as it coincides with the U.S. election around LGBTQ people, individuals, as well as working on my first manuscript, which looks at a decade of trans inclusion in television, starting with Laverne Cox in 2013 and kind of leading us up into this particular area, which I know we're moving into an anti-diversity area. So we're seeing a lot of television shows move away from these diverse representations. So my research focuses in that. And so a lot of the things I bring to this is thinking about the ways in which the media is pushing a lot of misinformation and the ways in which we can fight back against that misinformation.
Thank you so much. And now let's move down the line here and introduce Dr. J. Wallace Skelton.
Thank you. So I want to say, Travers in the introduction said that I'm interested in co-research with children as well as trans and non-binary children. And I want to say that both of these for me are about children's agency. And how do we as a culture recognize children as fully human, as knowledge makers, as whole people with things to teach us and share with us, and who need to be able to make choices about their own lives? And so that's a really present theme in a lot of the work that I do. I am working on two projects at the moment, one of which has been interviewing parents who see themselves as advocates for their two-spirit trans and non-binary young people. Thinking about how do we resource parents, how do we support parents, how do we share their success stories. It's been a really interesting moment to do this in a conversation where parents' rights have suddenly been weaponized against trans and non-binary and two-spirit youth. And to say we've done interviews with 70 parents across Canada whose rights are not being respected as parents and who see their rights as parents as secondary to their children's rights. And how do we ensure that children's rights are being respected because they're real and present and there and not a language of parental rights? My other piece of ongoing research is thinking about ways that this current language of parents' rights and attacks on education around sex and gender and sexuality in school is impacting people and ways we are resisting and creating possibilities nonetheless. That second part being really important to me because we are doing brilliant things in difficult places. And we are creating possibilities we didn't know that we'd have to build, but that are nevertheless delicious and brilliant and necessary. And I want to make sure that we don't lose those in a space that feels toxic and hard.
Thank you very much. And Travers, if you would like to share more, I know you started this event and organized it. You know, what prompted you to do that? And what would you like to come out of this conversation tonight?
I published a book on trans kids in 2018 called The Trans Generation, How Trans Kids and Their Parents Are Creating a Gender Revolution. And it was based on interviews with over 30 trans kids and young people, as well as additional interviews of parents of trans kids. And it came out in 2018, but I basically finished writing it right after Trump had been elected. And I certainly noted the damaging change in tone with that administration compared with the Obama administration with regard to queer and trans people. But I didn't expect this to happen, that we would see Alberta pass the policy that it did, that we would see New Brunswick pass the policy that it did, that we'd see Saskatchewan pass the policy that they did, and then announced that they would be invoking the notwithstanding clause so that they could basically ignore the human rights of their student population. I didn't expect the anti-queer and anti-trans backlash to be so intense. You know, perhaps that was my own naivete, but we definitely have people who have trouble with trans people and don't want us to exist. Absolutely. There are people who believe that, you know, there are only two sexes and the lines demarcating one from the other are absolutely clear, which they're not. But in any event, the popular wisdom is there. But what I noticed with the most alarm is that conservative politicians and organizations are using fear-mongering, particularly around trans kids, as well as the participation of trans women and girls in women's sport, in order to gain political office and pass a whole series of measures that increase social inequality more broadly and are incredibly harmful for public institutions. So I think it's really important to note that not only are we seeing trans people being targeted for you know, discrimination, etc., but we are seeing conservative movements using trans politics, anti-trans politics, to seize state power. So I think it's really important that we understand this. And the round of interviews that I've been doing with trans kids and young people now in these times is very different. There's not the sense of hopefulness. There's not the sense of things are getting better, because that's not what's happening. I'm talking to kids who had access to trans-affirming healthcare, and no, they don't. And some are able to move from state to state to flee these measures. And in Canada, I'm sure some people who can afford to are considering leaving Alberta in the hope that a province that they move to won't adopt similar measures. So it's really been on my mind, and I've been wanting to just create more space so that we could have conversations to understand what is misinformation versus what is fact.
Thank you very much. And we're going to go into a little bit of a conversation now with our panel members here. And Travers, I'm struck by what you just said, that the interviews you conducted a few years ago for your book, very different from the interviews you're conducting now. And you touched on the legislative changes that we've seen here in Canada, in Saskatchewan, New Brunswick, and last week in Alberta. And perhaps let's focus on that, the mandate that students under the age of 16 need parental consent to change their name or use their preferred pronouns in school. What happens when these policies are put in place? What is the impact on queer and trans youth and all students? And perhaps we'll start with you, but we'll have our other panelists, Jay and Victoria, join in as well.
I think what people don't understand is that often queer and trans kids find school to be a safer place than home. And in school, they can have their pronouns respected. They can have a name that they feel more appropriately represents them used. And they may or may not be prepared to share this information with their parents. And I guarantee that one of the first questions a school staff member or a teacher would ask, have you spoken with your parents about this? And if the kid says, no, I haven't, you know, they'll say, is there a way that I can help you have this conversation? Teachers are not trying to keep information from parents. They're trying to keep children safe. And if a child in your care tells you, if my parents learn that I am queer or trans or non-binary, I don't know what will happen, but I'm terrified. You have a duty to protect that child's well-being. The measures that are passed in New Brunswick, in Alberta, in Saskatchewan, now require school staff to report to parents if a child in their care discloses a queer or trans identity. They require parental permission to use the appropriate pronouns, the appropriate name for the child. And the Alberta policy took it one step further in that New Brunswick and Saskatchewan, this is for kids who are under 16. Alberta teachers and school staff no longer need parental consent to respect a student's pronouns and name, but they are still required to inform them. And you can imagine, I know that, you know, Danielle Smith said we have child protection policies that, you know, are there to keep kids from being harmed by their parents. Well, it doesn't really help if the harm has already occurred. Or in some cases, I've started to also interview trans young adults, so 18 to like 25. That's a whole generation of very vulnerable trans kids. If they lose parental support, they can be homeless. Post-secondary education ideas go out the window. And certainly in Vancouver and other parts of Canada where rents are really high, losing family support is a huge threat to security and to the future. So I really think that these policies are going to be incredibly harmful. And certainly the students that I have talked to are just absolutely horrified, because for them, many of them, school has been the one safe place. So congratulations to all the educators in this room and online for creating that environment for some kids, because it means the world to them.
Jay, you talked about a child's agency. How does a policy like this requiring consent from parents if you're under 16 to be able to use your preferred pronouns, what impact does that have on a child's agency?
So I want to actually start by saying yes and okay. to everything Travers
sure, no, said. Please go ahead.
Yes and. And I'm really thinking about it from Saskatchewan, which is where I'm based.
Sure.
And so I'm going to talk about Bill 137, which is the number for the legislation in Saskatchewan. And I'm saying that intentionally because otherwise I have to call it the Parents' Rights Bill, which is a fiction. So the number, which is real, is how I'm going to talk about it. I hear from students about how this is creating a climate of fear at school. And I want us to think not just about the students who feel, if my parents know, I will be unsafe. It's important to think about them, but that's not all students. I want us to think about the students who feel that I'm worried about how my parents might respond, and I'm going to test this out at school first. This feels like a less emotionally dangerous place to try out my name, my pronouns, and I'm going to do it here first so that I can feel confident when I bring it home and talk about it with my parents. So these are not young people who are doing this in opposition to their parents. They're often feeling really based in love and respect, but they want space to feel sure first. And school's providing that space when there isn't legislation preventing it. I hear a lot from teachers who are feeling unsure about running GSAs now. What if I run a GSA and a student comes out to me in the GSA? Has my GSA, which I intended as a support, created a climate that is less safe for this young person? I hear a lot of principals saying, we're not going to do any of those programs anymore. And I hear a lot of teachers who are really angry because they feel the legislation is forcing them to violate the professional ethics for teachers, which really are to put the needs of children first and care for children. The most exciting piece in terms of youth agency is coming from young people in Saskatchewan who are organizing in protest. New year, new name is their slogan. So if we have to send home forms to parents every time someone changes their name and pronouns, what if we did it daily? Let us engage in malicious compliance. Let us bring our new names and our new pronouns in on a daily basis, go to the office and get paperwork. And how many of these do we need to have before the school says, this is not actually the business of education. This is the business of control. This is the business of domination, and we're not doing it anymore. So young people are organizing, they are exercising their agency, and they are putting to the test whether this is something that can be done.
Okay. And what about you, Victoria? I'll let you do a yes and then as well.
So I want to kind of pick up with what Travers was saying about, you know, the idea that home is kind of could become unsafe, right? And we know that there's a huge population of LGBTQ individuals who end up homeless, right? And this is historic. It's not something that's new. And so in particular, we know for trans communities, a lot of these individuals are lacking lots of resources. And so this idea that school becomes this space where you can play out these social things. And in particular, school is where we learn, how is society going to treat me? How am I going to be viewed and valued? And if we're telling them as youth, you're not going to be viewed and valued for your trans identity as a youth, what we're really telling them is that we don't want you to make it to adulthood. We don't want you to make it to adulthood with this identity. And so that's also going to increase less and less programs for trans adults, right? Because the conversation now is on them as youth, which is important, but they're going to grow up really quickly. And so if they know that they haven't had the social space in school, then they already know society is not looking out for them. And they don't have the protection of their parents once they hit 18. You know, that's my biggest fear, is that now we do have some parents who can speak for them, who can help them. But once they hit 18, who is going to be there, right? Because we haven't taught them that they were important. We haven't given them the resources that they can use to help them, because we've had to either lie about it or we've had to not be able to talk about it. So I definitely think it's important for us to think about how our trans youth are going to move forward if we're not building resources for them as youth and as adults. Mm.
I'd like to get to that, because you talked about the GSAs and how they are either being dismantled or not being started. So when you talk about resources and what that means. But first, we are talking about these policies in schools. What about for parents who may see these policies, who may see that New Brunswick and Saskatchewan say that, you know, if you don't feel comfortable speaking to your parent, we can direct you to an appropriate school staff who can help you come up with a plan. What do you say to parents who read that, who see that, and say, that's, I would like to be as engaged with my child's school life as much as possible? That seems reasonable to me. What do you say to those parents?
I speak to a lot of parents,
actually, of trans kids and queer kids, and some of them talk about how they weren't the first person, they weren't the first place, home wasn't the first place. And others talk about being the only place where their kid could be themselves. You know, trans kids often live a double life. Some of them are authentic at school and hide at home because, you know, the message is loud and clear, I am not welcome here as I am. Or home is the only place where they can be seen for the boy or girl or non-binary kid that they are. And they talk about the difficulty of moving from one space to the other and how painful it is. And it's always about not being able to be trans in all those spaces. And some of the parents that I've spoken to whose kids took a while to share their transness with them, some of them were like really supportive, had queer and trans friends, but for whatever reason, their kid had looked on the internet and found that, you know, a lot of trans kids get kicked out of their homes when they come out. And even though their parents are incredibly supportive, they heard this they heard this and they got frightened. But the parents, talk about that as a little bit eye-opening. I thought I was creating a really safe and supportive space for my kid. And the fact that it was hard for them to tell me this is really important for me to know. And these parents have gone on to be incredible supporters of their trans kids. They've educated their families. They've gone into schools to educate staff, etc. So, you know, the parents that I've spoken with, the ones who didn't learn right away, they just feel lucky that their kid had the support that they did, that their kid is alive, that they can hug them, that they can feel optimistic about their future. They're grateful to the school.
And you look like you want to jump in there, Jay. Go ahead.
I want to sort of take it from a teacher's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because I hear from teachers who are really worried about parents who who might have complaints, who mm-hmm. might feel like they're not getting enough information. And one of the things that I found really valuable in helping parents and teachers navigate this is if we can recognize that both the teacher and the parent have the